This is the Team Builders Podcast, building better teams.
Focus on people, make sure the team are set up for success, and then most of the rest of it takes care of itself.
This is the Team Builders Podcast with Stephen Haseley, Jerry Crowley, and Jonathan Haseley.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Team Builders Podcast. This is the podcast where you hear insights into what makes a great team, as well as in-depth interviews from leaders of some of the top teams in the UK. And boy, do we have one for you today that I'm delighted to introduce very shortly. Before I do, I'm going to say hello to my two colleagues that are with me. Jerry, Stephen, how are you both?
Great, Jonathan. Strong start to the morning. I'm 3 weeks into the protein diet, feeling good and excited to meet our guest today.
Absolutely. We won't ask what's in the protein diet.
No. Sponsorship's on the way. I just haven't signed the paperwork.
It's so, definitely working for you. Stephen, how are you?
I'm McLovin' it, Jonathan.
Sponsorship definitely waiting for you, Stephen. Well, gents, I've got a very exciting day today. We are joined by a fantastic guest, Lieutenant Colonel Dean Canham, OBE. So let me tell you a little bit about Lieutenant Colonel Dean before we introduce him. He graduated from the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst in 2000. He looks a lot younger than that. I can't believe that, I'll be honest. He's been on tours of duty from Sierra Leone to Afghanistan and was involved in the 2012 Olympic Games. He received an OBE for his work in Africa, and in 2023, he became head of the Centre for Army Leadership based at the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst. Dean, it's wonderful to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your career to date, how you got from where you were to where you are now, and some of the fantastic things that you've explored along the way?
I've gone full circle. I'm speaking to you from the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst, where I now work, and that's where my army career started. I came here for my initial officer training for a year, and then when I finished, I was quite lucky. I went to my battalion and then straight out to Sierra Leone for a tour there just after the Civil War, and then did quite a bit of training in Kenya subsequently in the year or two afterwards as well. And I grew this affinity for Africa, which has been a bit of a recurring theme.
Yeah.
Through my career. But I did three tours of Afghanistan through the period of then and now as well. I guess some of the highlights of other types of jobs, I ran the plans desk for all of the UK's military operations in Africa. And that kind of culminated with a lot of work on trying to fix some certain elements of Somalia, which is no mean feat.
No doubt.
Big task. And strangely, perhaps for an infantryman assisted by a Royal Navy officer, we planned the building of a hospital in a landlocked country, a military hospital in South Sudan. And I was very lucky that throughout that very busy couple of years trying to get a hospital built in South Sudan and help out Somalia, then I was recognised with the OBE, which was a huge honour and privilege and much more of a reflection on my small team than it was on me. But it was really nice to be empowered and given a huge amount of responsibility and then just being allowed to get on with it. And it was great.
Absolutely. You know, listen, you know, from what we've had the pleasure of reading about your storied career, it really is exceptional. And we're really delighted to hear, although you've obviously achieved such amazing personal accolades, you attribute some of them to your team already, which of course is something that's so important to us in what we do. And we'd love to hear a little bit more about that. In particular, we appreciate, you know, how much effort and energy goes into the leadership of teams within your amazing organisation. And I know Stephen and Jerry have lots of different questions on that and how we might consider them versus some of the leadership styles that we see in the corporate businesses that we have the pleasure of working with every day. Stephen, I don't know if you maybe want to jump in with some things that you've got for Dean.
A question for you. As the head of Centre for Army Leadership, what would you say are the core principles of leadership that you personally can emphasise?
Naturally, as you would like to think, done a lot of thinking on this, and the Army has settled on a very clear structure for how it defines its core principles of leadership and how we try to communicate them as well. And we break that down into three main pillars, which is what leaders are, what leaders know, and what they do. And that basically translates to what leaders are, their character, what leaders know, mainly about what they know about themselves, what they know about their team and their job, and then what they do is really about their actions and behaviours when they are leading a team or being a follower in a team to make sure that leaders are successful as well. And we would say that we found everything in that first element, in character, because there's no point in knowing your team and your job or doing it if you are undermined by people with poor character. And I think for a translation across into the civilian or the business private sector space, we've seen over the last couple of years how big institutions, big companies can be completely upturned because of the character of just one or two individuals in them. And perhaps in the past, it wasn't the case that the actions of an individual could upend an entire organization. But now that certainly is the case. We've seen some sad reflections on that over the last couple of years. So character is the foundation of what we do in Leadership Principles.
I think, as you mentioned there, character is one thing that people tend to forget. And it still amazes me reading the news how a company can be valued one year over $18 billion and the next year be bankrupt. It's surprising how quickly that change can come about. Do you think character is built or developed? Do you think it's inherent, or do you think that can be developed through time, Dean?
It's making a distinction perhaps between personality and character. So people's personality is their personality. You can do things to adjust and change it if you're really self-aware, or you have people close to you that are willing to tell you what needs to be better. Character, and in particular leadership skills and traits, are things which you can definitely teach people, and they can learn them. That can be quite intimidating for some people. So we would always advocate just, you know, identifying a couple of little things which you know you could be better at yourself, or ideally other people tell you that you could be better at as well. And then just doing tiny little exercises to get a little bit better in one area, practice it, reflect on it, and then move on, get another one. And actually then, because every leader is always developing all the time, ideally, then there's always work for everyone to do on improving their character, their leadership skills, traits and competencies, those sorts of things.
I've got an interesting one, because what you were talking about last weekend, I was listening to some sport and one football manager, I won't mention, and they were asked a similar question about how did they turn the team around in a season where they lost their best player. And he said that he would way much rather a character over the skill of a player, because at the elite level that he's playing at, the skill level difference isn't great enough to have a bad character within the team, you know. So that really reflected me. And my question, to just kind of segue link across, was, do you have a leader that you would admire yourself, that maybe you model some of your behaviour on?
Yeah, so I've been asked that a couple of times, and often I've had different answers, but I think I've settled now, and it's not one that most people will know unless they've been in the army. But if it's the person that keeps popping back up in my head, then that's probably the right person that I should be talking about. And it was an officer, he left the army a couple of years ago as a general, a guy called Bob Bruce. And he was my boss when I was working in Army headquarters, and probably his portfolio of work was bigger than most. He was intensely busy under a huge amount of pressure to deliver some very important, very expensive things for the army and for the taxpayer. But no matter what pressure he was under, he was always focused on the people in the team. And he would make sure that regardless of how busy he was, he made sure the team were okay. He was just a decent human being at every stage, regardless of what was happening. And as a result, then the team looked after all the rest of the stuff itself. He just had to focus on those big decisions that people couldn't make on his behalf. But because people were happy at work and they were productive and they were empowered to do stuff for him, then he delivered a masterclass in just focusing on people, no matter how busy he could or should have otherwise been. And so he's kind of the guy that I look back to if I'm looking for a reference point. Yeah. Focus on people, make sure the team are set up for success, and then most of the rest of it takes care of itself.
Yeah, like a guiding light. You know, you meet those people along the way, don't you? And it's easy to look at a TV or watch sport and think they're a great manager, a great leader, but I can connect to that hugely.
I hope you don't mind, Dean. You know, we always reflect, obviously, on the position of which you find yourself in, or, you know, the business operations of the army, if that's a good way to put it, versus, you know, some of the businesses that we would work with daily. And of course, you know, we recognise the alignment and the similarities, but obviously, of course, the different sides and the scales of those things. And that's something that often springs to mind. And you mentioned about, you know, always focusing on the people, regardless of how challenging an environment it might be. And in my opinion, or whenever I think of those kind of, you know, services-based operations around the world, to me, the challenges are greater than any challenge that businesses tend to face. You know, how do you feel around, you know, the encouragement of, we often talk with our business clients around resilience, you know, working through challenges, being adaptable in difficult situations, especially when you're faced with particularly difficult circumstances. Is that something that's a key focus for you and your teams whenever you're out there, you know, in operation?
Yeah, absolutely. We focus, obviously, on that very hard edge of what we might be asked to do every now and then. And the actual reality of doing that is a very small percentage of the time in the life of a soldier. But you want to be ready when you get to that point. And so we spend a huge amount of time training. And the reality is that training, it gets you into a position where you recognize the situation that you then find yourself in.
Yeah.
It feels familiar and you can make good leadership decisions because you have practiced doing them already. And we would also advocate, and it sounds slightly counterintuitive perhaps, that by constantly rehearsing things and making sure they go wrong,
then you're
in the best possible position for the day when it's all going wrong. The plan will always fall apart in some sense, but if you are well rehearsed at changing your plans, then you'll be well placed to deal with it.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, it's so easy to create a strategy or a plan, but if you can't change, if you can't be adaptable, you know, you've got no chance. So I like the fact that you talk about practicing adaptability, practicing the ability to think, okay, this is going wrong, we need to change that. That's a great way to look at it. One thing that really stuck out to me there as well, I'm just talking to my two colleagues here, whenever we work with our clients, we talk about, you know, you can't contribute all of the time, but whenever your time comes, make sure you're there, ready to step up. And in my opinion, that's resilience. Every day that goes past, and I'm sure maybe in the army, I kind of connect with that whole Jarhead movie of, you know, waiting for something to happen. And then all of a sudden it does, and you have to be ready to step up in that moment.
Yeah, I've got a specific point in time that I refer back to, which was, you mentioned a movie, you know, it was like the stereotypical cinematic movie, military movie leadership moment when there's lots of things going wrong. There's some pretty impactful incidents that have happened. There was one particular day. It was early in our third tour of Afghanistan. We'd had one very young soldier lose both his legs just 6 days before. And then it just happened again, another young soldier losing both their legs and their hand. And in the minutes, which felt like hours after that specific incident, when you're the boss on the ground, and that's happened twice to your team, it does feel like everything's slowing down. It feels like there's 100 sets of eyes looking directly at you, and everyone is saying, what now?
Yeah.
What do we do now? And I think because I'd done the training, because I knew the team well enough, and because I was just able to have had that bit of time beforehand to know what the bigger picture was and what we needed to do. Ultimately, the question, of course, everyone's asking, I'm asking myself, is what do we do now? Do we go forward or do we go back? And I knew instantly the right decision was go forward. But knowing the right decision and doing the right thing are difficult, because when you're asking people to put themselves forward again in that situation, it's quite a high-pressure decision. And you've also got your own personal concerns and fears because you're there as well, as you should be. So I reflect back on movies that have that slow-mo, everything's going crazy around you, what do we do now moment, and I can recognise it.
On the leadership front, Dean, a lot of people that are listening on the podcast are already leaders or potentially will be leaders in the future. How would you convince them, or how would you talk about changing people's mindsets to go from small level, sweating the small stuff of potentially having a puncture on the way to work or the coffee machine running out, to some of the bigger picture things that you've had to deal with, so that they can focus on the results and the vision and the values of the company rather than get tied up with small things that won't make any difference in the overall performance of the business and the individuals?
It can be really difficult because, and it's, I remind people that the vast majority of leaders want to do a good job.
Yep.
And if some people, it's very easy to criticize leaders for that very fact, because they are the person up front, up top, who appears to be steering the ship, but actually probably isn't. We would always advocate saying to a leader that if they can identify why they need their team to do something and give them a broad aiming marker in the future, if you've got those two things in place, then as best you can, sit back and let the team get on with it and let them, encourage them to come to you when they need another steer. But if you've got that North Star almost, this is where we need to get to and this is why we need to get there, then actually most people, if they're on board with it, will get the team there. Nobody likes to be micromanaged or have a leader who doesn't really know their business getting involved in it. But it's a two-way street as well. You need to develop trust so that the boss can give you that direction, leave you to get on with it. And over time, as you build that trust, then the team's going to be significantly stronger.
Simple things said well hit hard, don't they? That's how I see it. And just want to quickly jump back, you know, just to give a thought, Dean, to what you said a moment ago. And I've took a couple of quick notes, and you've mentioned practice wrongly. You mentioned training, and in your description of training, you were actually practicing within the training. And some things that businesses miss out on is they put the training program in place, but there's no practice for the training, and there's no, certainly no practicing wrongly. You're only ever shown the right way to do something. And there's myself looking back at some of opportunities that I may be missing in our team is when they do it wrongly, they actually don't know what to do. And that's what grinds to a halt. Yeah.
So what we also practice a lot is once the boss has set out their vision, where they want to get to, what they need to achieve, we then take the boss out of the scenario.
Yeah.
Which could happen to us on operations. And then when things do start to get difficult or go wrong and the boss isn't there, you start to see other leaders emerging, or you see the team pulling together to say, well, this is what the boss wanted us to do. Let's keep working in that direction. They'll become hugely more effective as a result if they don't have you as the leader to refer back to.
Yeah, I feel like I should have a personal
one-to-one.
Yeah, it's awesome. Just a quick sidestep into communication, Dean, because it kind of links in well there, especially with the young recruits you mentioned. What ways could we impart some knowledge to not just to listen to communication, but how to do it effectively, if that makes sense?
What I have seen most effectively, and it sounds quite time-consuming, but then that's okay if it's achieving what you need to achieve, is an acceptance that different people in your team, and ideally anyone's team, will be as diverse as possible across all different planes. Different people will hear what you're saying in different ways, or they might not hear it at all. But it's kind of assumed that your one method of communication is communicated your message and that's it, it's done.
Yeah.
So we go through, you know, most militaries will go through a process of reading back people's understanding. So once you have communicated to them, give them a bit of time to think about it, but then make sure they come back and tell you what they think you've asked them to do. And then you'll be surprised probably at the different interpretations of what you've said. You can practice being clearer in your direction, or you can just accept that you're going to need to communicate in different ways for different elements of your team in the future. And that can be as simple as, we have a lot of really strong young people coming into the army, but they are different. Yeah. And how a 17 or 18 year old hears something and understands it is very different to how a 28 year old hears it, and how a 18 year old man hears it is very different to how an 18 year old woman hears it, because the physiological changes, differences in their brain, just means that they're at different stages on the whole. And so none of them are better or worse, they're just different. And actually realizing that means you can learn to use a broader spectrum of communication, or just be a lot clearer, or communicate differently to different groups.
Yeah, we often talk about some of the missteps we think of leaders are expecting everybody to be like you, as opposed to you being able to change your style, stance, to allow everyone to get on board with you. Those are two very different things. And I think we recognize that a lot in teams that are maybe struggling in a leadership battle, for want of a better word, you know, versus what you've described there. You know, it's really about recognizing what your team need, not what you need, and then how you deliver that. I think that's really inspirational there.
Especially perhaps in a military organization, which is very hierarchical. Messages permeate down, and always really useful after you've issued a bit of direction to go to people at the lowest level, once it should have filtered down, and check their understanding of what you said and how it's changed as it's moved through the chain of command.
Yeah, I think that's a good point for teams, you know, in any organization. Yeah. Isn't it?
It's almost, you're saying it almost again, practice your communication.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Another small misstep or misunderstanding that we've come across over the years has been when a client asks us to make them a team next Thursday, with an unrealistic expectation of doing an event, and that suddenly makes them a team. And one of the things we gleaned from our earlier podcast was when someone from a sporting background said they set their goals at the start of the year for the rest of the year. So what's a realistic time frame for you? Are you talking months, years, or generations in terms of development of people and teams, Dean?
So pretty much every model that we have in our leadership writing and doctrine and stuff has a box around it, which says context. And the context will always be different. And being able to change your approach according to the context is when you get into really skilled leadership and team building. We have an advantage, and it's imbued over hundreds of years, where we, particularly in the more junior years of soldiers' careers, they live together. They physically live together most of the time. They certainly train alongside each other. They're spending a huge amount of time with each other, and they're put into difficult situations pretty quickly together. They're then probably on their time off also spending that time together. And so what we managed to foster and generate is a really strong, deep level of camaraderie and teamship right from the off. But businesses don't have that luxury because forcing all of your people in their initial training to live together, socialize together and do difficult things together, it might be desirable, but it's not realistic. Yep. And so it's probably going to take a bit longer. But if you use the same principles, get people close together, get them in difficult situations early on, get them to be looking out for each other. That's the real thing which we're trying to generate, people looking after each other in every different type of situation. And if they're doing that, then when it really comes to the crunch on the difficult days, they're going to default to doing that as well.
It's the care, you know, and the attention. It's not about caring about the job that gets done. It's about caring for the people that are doing the job. And then everything after that, you know, falls in. You've mentioned so many different aspects and things which I know we've all connected with and the teams that we have the pleasure of working with in corporate organisations. And you've hit a lot of little almost like sound bites or keynotes where like, love it, love it, love it. Is there anything, you know, as we finish up that you might want to suggest to our listeners around actionable takeaways that they can perhaps go and implement in their own teams to enhance teamwork that you can draw out from your incredible experience in the Army over all these years?
The conclusion I've come to, I've been in this job now for 8 months, is that I see, I visit, I talk about a huge range of team building and leadership training. Most of it is really good. Yeah. And everyone in the room sits nodding, agreeing that this is great training, it's a great opportunity, and that they need to develop themselves in accordance with what they're being told. And then everyone walks out of that room, goes back to their desk and starts tapping away on their inbox. And yeah, next year, the team building day will come around again and we'll talk about it again. Yeah. And I think the huge gap in the discipline and the market is actually pinning individuals down to change something as a result of what they're doing. And there's not many places that manage that extra step. And it's the most important step because everyone agrees it's something good that they need to do to develop themselves, make their teams better, but they fail to close the loop. So I would say first step for anyone is self-awareness. Everyone probably knows the things that they are not as good at as they could be. Yeah. And if they don't know what it is, then other people will tell you if you ask them to tell you honestly. And if you take that first step of self-awareness, identify a couple of little things that you could be better at. And as I mentioned previously, just the ability to find these things to tell you how to get better are all open source now. Look it up, say, I'm going to practice that for a few weeks, a few months. I'm going to get better at it, and then I'm going to find something else. And just keep going that way. Small steps. Make sure people are honest with you, and you'll get better and better all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And the small steps thing, the marginal gains, you know, that we're not asking for 100% more, we're asking for 1% more. That's all the things that we very much recognise. And again, with a lot of the leaders that we have the, you know, privilege to work with in the organisations that we do, that's where they're at. They're not expecting everybody to overhaul their character, as we might go back to the start and bring it full circle with you. But if they can just implement that small bit more, that little bit of practice, that small change, that's what can make all the difference, Dean. And I'm sure those things, particularly in an organisation like yours, makes all the difference when it comes to being there on the day.
Absolutely, it does.
Gents, listen, I've thoroughly enjoyed our time with Lieutenant Colonel Dean. I almost got there, Dean. Thanks so much for your time and input today. I'm sure the two boys would like to say goodbye before I do.
Yes, Dean, very insightful. Thanks for your time, and best luck in the future too in your career. Hope to maybe perhaps have a podcast too in a couple of years' time.
Dean, it's been a pleasure to talk to a man that's not just interested but committed.
Dean, thanks for having me. It's been a great joy to talk to you. Good luck, everyone, there with what you're doing.
Thanks so much, Dean. We really appreciate that. Folks, that's it for this episode of the Team Builders Podcast. It really has been an absolute pleasure to have been joined by Dean today. If you'd like to find out more about what Dean does at the Centre for Army Leadership, please check out the details in the description below. You can check out details on our website. Lieutenant Colonel Dean Canham, OBE, it's been a pleasure to have him here with us and learn more about what it takes to be a fantastic leader in the Army.